At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're continuing with our set of position group reviews. And today, we're going to be talking about the wide receiver position. Joining me for that is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me back on the show. I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to talking about, I think, a really fun position this year for the Ravens.
Yeah, it hasn't been nearly as fun in the history of the Ravens. And great year from Flowers and Bateman. We got good news now, it seems like, on Monken with an extension being worked on right now. Another big coaching move today, Chuck Pagano hired for the second to be head of the secondary coach. I think that's what it means. He's a senior secondary coach. Does that mean, is that below or above the secondary coach? I really don't know.
I think only Harbaugh probably knows the answer to that. But I mean, given his, his experience level, I would think that it's probably more of a senior advisor on the defense with a focus on, secondary. That would be the way I interpret that. Not necessarily being a positional coach.
Yeah, that obviously would be great. If it's another Dean Pease-esque advisor. At some point, you get to the point where there's too many cooks in the kitchen and whatnot, but it's going to be interesting to see how Pagano is positioned in camp when they deal with the secondary, if that's really exactly what he's doing and whatnot. But it's a great experience hire. I kind of hope the Ravens will get some younger succession planning hires, but this is a good one. This is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember his impact when he was a DC here, and before that, defensive backs coach. Obviously, left too soon, I think, from a lot of Ravens fans' perspectives. But It's good to have him, back in the building, especially after everything that he's gone through personally. To see him back coaching, I think, is great.
Yeah, and I don't know how many years he was out of football or what he's been doing exactly year by year. It's not something I checked right before. Just got the news right before we're about to record. But anyway, I think it's got to be good news. Let's talk about the wide receiver game, though. 2024, a really excellent, groundbreaking year in a lot of ways for Ravens wide receivers. The backups also, in addition to the big years from Flowers and Bateman, I thought played well when Flowers was hurt in particular. This is a good season of Lamar spreading the ball around, about him being a more able to do that, probably more extended play targets, I thought, in a big way in 2024. So a great year for the wide receivers.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely some personal bests, clearly, from two key wide receivers they will talk about. And then just Lamar continuing to mature as that, that distributor of the ball, someone who at times in the past has kind of had his favorites in terms of who he likes to throw to. I feel like this year he's distributed the ball more evenly, as you mentioned, to the wide receivers, but also to the other positions as well. And really just having the confidence in all his receivers and in his ability to get them the ball, I think, was a big part of, him continuing to make strides, which is a remarkable thing to say, considering the level of play we've seen from him over the years.
Right. A three-time MVP who's still honestly got a lot better in 2024, which is Absolutely shocking to me. I thought the chances were very high that Lamar had his best season ever in 2019. And I think it was probably true until this year. But this year, he, I think, has set a new level.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers, I think, speak for themselves. But beyond that, I think the film also speaks for itself, just his comfort level in general. And his complete control over everything that's going on around him on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Wide receiver group as a whole, very solid individual play. Bateman stepping up to be a good version of himself, and Flowers having a year that was a little bit of an advance from the previous year. We'll get into that. One of the things that stands true in this is the tight ends had a big drop in targets last year to 110 with a passer rating of slightly over 140. This year, the tight ends got 138 targets. 25% increase, basically, and 141.3 rating. So that's 2 years in a row. It's a two-year period of which the passer rating of the tight ends has been north of 140 in aggregate.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. I don't know if it's like historic to have back-to-back years like that, but it's probably close to that level. Part of that is just the remarkable touchdown efficiency from the tight end position that's going to drive up the passer rating. But just in general, they've been such reliable targets for him. It's really nice to see that type of, positional group come through. And even when they don't always have to be the main focus of the offense, I think that allows them to shine, because there are other weapons, as we'll talk about, in the wide receiver room as well. So it allows them to be even better, I think.
They ran under center a lot more this year, which is something that's going to improve the involvement of the tight ends. And I kind of felt like last year, it's one of these things that's either you can have a lot of targets and have them be not as efficient as it had been for part of Andrew's story in his career. It was a declining efficiency on a per target basis. And that all has turned around the last couple of years with the best passer rating when thrown to of his entire career the last couple of years. But they also had the increase in targets this year. That had a big decrease in targets to only 110 for the group. I thought that's a number that, like, okay, the efficiency is there on a per snap basis, but now we're not throwing to them enough. And before, it wasn't there, and we were, they went, I think they had 195 targets down to 110 from 22 to 23, which obviously is a big decline. Some of that was a fair amount of Tyler Huntley play was mixed into that, probably reducing the numbers, obviously. But this seems to be a good medium. Wouldn't mind to see it go higher either.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks to the Ravens' depth of pass catching options, and the ability to kind of move the needle in terms of game planning, however, is fit for what opponent's showing them. If it's a team that's much more kind of focused on stopping the run, for instance, maybe being more susceptible to play action, tight ends can be very, very good targets in those types of situations over the middle. On some of like the boot action, we saw some plays that Lamar hit tight ends on. And then wide receivers obviously can be a different type of downfield passing attack when, the offense or the defenses are kind of sitting back in zone coverages, which we saw a lot of that this year. So wide receivers were very good at finding those holes against that type of coverage. And it really just depended on whatever the defense was giving them, they were able to find an approach. And that speaks a lot to what Todd Monken was able to do at the coordinator position.
We'll talk about some separation metrics as we go through this. But one of the things that we have to realize is that a lot of that separation value is probably due to Lamar, and particularly on extended plays, being able to create additional separation for his receivers. So those numbers are always kind of fraught with peril, I think, because they're, when is it measured? How is it done exactly? You need to understand the methodology to really be into that. And frankly, I've had a lot of trouble asking the next gen stats people exactly how that thing is calculated. Specifically, the speed thing has been extremely frustrating. I don't know if you've seen me tweeting back and forth with them about that, but that's highly frustrating.
I think separation is really a difficult thing, especially because it's I don't, at least from what I've seen, it's not just man coverage, right? So like separation is finding, being able to find like soft spots in a zone. And the Ravens faced a lot of zone coverage. So if you look at a lot of these like touchdowns, like in the red zone, you have a wide receiver or tight end that doesn't have a guy 5 yards near them. It's because of the way the play is designed and the tension that Lamar draws and the ability to kind of create that opportunity for someone to get open, or his ability to extend the play and draw attention to himself, and a guy finds a soft spot in the back of the end zone. And it's not just obviously in the red zone; it's all fit, in, you know, on other plays that you know they've designed specific like 2 or 3 man routes to attack a coverage that they're expecting downfield. And there's so much attention that Lamar draws, whether or not it's him just extending a play or just the nature of the play design in itself, that he has all the eyeballs on him. And if he can use his eyes to move one defender, then all of a sudden you have a wide open receiver. And that's not just because they're just that much better than all the other wide receivers in the NFL. You can't just think that these two guys all of a sudden became the best two wide receivers at separating an entire NFL. I mean, they're good receivers, but there's so much more to it than that. So it's just kind of a ridiculous thing to point to. And then we don't have to rehash that over and over again, but it's just, there's just so much more to it than like us one number.
Right. I agree. And you know, it's just, you're right. We've done enough of this. Odell Beckham, cautionary tale to say the least about how you can end up paying for a receiver and he still ends up costing you over time here. It was a big deal. This money that he cost the Ravens in 2024, it was a big deal. And I believe there may still be some on the books in 2025. I might be wrong about that, but because he was a post-June 1 cut, I think they took some in 24 and 25. So I believe there's still some. Nelson Aguilar is going to have, already has about $3.5 million pushed into next year that was based on, you know, what they signed him for. So they're paying for a lot of receivers who are no longer here. And that's what dead money is. And you know, you do want to try and make use of it when you really need to, and they have players they need to use it on this offseason as well. But it's also every time you write a contract like that and only care about what this year's cap is, you put yourself in jeopardy for future years. In 2025 in particular, the Ravens need cap space to sign their own players, not go out to free agent market and spend like crazy, but just even to sign their own players.
Yeah, and the Ravens have been so good at drafting in recent years that they unfortunately won't be able to retain all of their players, which I think generally is the case with the Ravens. They historically have a lot of comp picks because they draft incredibly well and they don't often sign a lot of players in free agency. And it's probably going to continue to look that way in the coming years because there's just no way that you can re-sign all the players that you may want to keep. So it's kind of like the blessing and the curse is the two sides of the same coin, where you have these great players that you bring in, but it's just impossible to retain all of them. So the comp pick game helps you a little bit in that, you know, at least you get some more available kind of picks to kind of keep feeding into that process. But when you make some of these decisions in free agency, it also then impacts the ability, like you said, to keep all those players. So I think sometimes, you know, it's worth taking those swings. You want to identify talent and bring in talent. And I think there have been positive impacts from both, you know, Beckham and Aguilar, whether or not it, you know, meets the value of what they pay them. I would say probably not. But, you know, it's not like they've been complete, like, Deontay Johnsons on the field.
No. I think Aguilar earned his money and Beckham didn't, is exactly how I would put the thing. I mean, Beckham for $18 million for a year just didn't make even a whit of sense. And then the people who want him back after that, oh my God, come on, stop, please. But at the wide receiver position, the salary in the, some of the with it organizations have stayed away from signing big wide receivers, but the Ravens are going to be in a position where they either have to pay Flowers or Bateman, and they probably will end up paying one of those two. Or they're going to, and probably they're going to need to continue to draft at positions that have high second contract value, which means you can't always draft a or the BPA has to be in a narrower set of positions. Let me put it that way. When you go in the first or second round, even.
Definitely more challenge trying to hit on those types of players. I think, you know, the Ravens have done a good job of that, for the most part, hitting on the early round picks, which is really important. But, you know, they're going to have to continue to do that. And that's how teams like the Chiefs, for instance, have continued to like be as good as they have been in recent years, because they've made so many quality draft picks and they've been able to keep that flow of talent coming, even as they have lost players. They have lost very good players, and all the good teams in the NFL are faced with that dilemma, because there's, you know, there's really no way around this process of always being able to maintain everybody, especially with, you know, the high end contracts like blossoming and exploding to what they are now. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is like probably the best deal in all of NFL right now, considering what he makes on a per year basis compared to what the new contracts are looking like at the quarterback position.
Right. You want to sign long term? They did improve his pay at some point during this 10-year deal he signed. By the way,
he's still making less than like a lot of the guys who are not nearly as good as him, though.
Okay,
as a Dak Prescott, maybe, who's making, I don't know, like $65 million a year or something next year. Like,
wow,
yeah, it's crazy. Okay. Some of the
that's Lamar Jackson money.
Yeah, I mean, it is. he's not Lamar Jackson.
Yes, he is not. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the individual receivers here, starting with Zay Flowers, who made his first Pro Bowl. I think there's a very interesting pairing of stats, and a couple of guys did better in this, but Flowers had his targets increase from 108 to 116. So not a huge increase, 7-8%, whatever that is. But at the same time, his yards per target also increased from 7.9 to 9.1. The combination of those two things, increasing your targets and increasing your yards per target, is a very tough double. His passer rating is interesting. It actually declined. I think it's due to a lower number of touchdowns, because he didn't have any interceptions thrown his way. But 110.2 to 108.4 decline in passer rating. I don't know how to otherwise state that or ask a question coming out of this, other than, you know, I've always felt like marginal targets were where you lose a lot of efficiency. That certainly was a case of Andrews, as his target numbers really picked up with Jackson. But in this case, to increase both targets and yards per target, just very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just speaks to the growth of both him in his second year, and also the growth of Lamar Jackson in the second year of a new offense. The ability to get on the same page on scramble drills, I think Zay did a great job of that this year. He really kind of, in some ways, took over that primary target that Lamar was looking for on a lot of plays that used to be Mark Andrews, I think. In a lot of key situations, a lot of third downs, like third and longs, Zay was kind of the guy. He wasn't necessarily the deep home run threat or field stretcher. We'll talk about Rashad Bateman later, but I think in the intermediate game, that's really where Zay Flowers shown this year. They do still have, you know, the short kind of gadgety plays that I feel almost take away from his game. And take away from the offense as well. And I think that's part of the reason why they didn't actually miss him a huge amount in the playoffs, because they just kind of took those plays pretty much entirely out of the offense. And a lot of times it's just like empty calorie type plays where you're not really getting much out of it. Occasionally one will hit and he makes a couple players miss and he'll pick up, you know, 10, 15 yards. But I feel like they're more often or not, you know, 2 to 5 yard plays that are more so just to gain the defense's attention, I think, than actually having the benefit of, you know, picking up significant chunks of yards.
Well, Flowers does a lot for this team when he's down the field. He has a gravitational pull to the safety on his side, or the single high, if that's what there is. It's just, you know, you give up a lot of that when you keep him somewhere behind the line of scrimmage, and that allows the defense to compress. He did have a higher ADOT this year. It's up to 10.4. So if I look at the PFF numbers, it was 22nd of 41 wide receivers who played 50% of snaps. I'm not going to go into redefining that. It's not, doesn't mean exactly 50% of their team snaps. It means 50% of the most that any receiver had. So 10.4 ADOT was a 50th percentile roughly result, 22nd out of 41. Like I said, it was about a 40th percentile result he had last year in round even 10% increments to count it out that way. That to me is the right direction for that to go. I felt like we'd started that way in the second half of 23, and to see it continue in 24 is a positive thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was, and I think for a similar reason last year, he was became more of a intermediate and to a certain extent deep threat last year because Andrews wasn't on the field as much or wasn't as effective. And because of the injury, obviously, I think he took over more of that role. I think that bled into 2024 as well. And I think that's really where Flowers is at his best. You know, he's, I mean, we talked about the separation before, and I don't want to downplay that ability because I think Flowers does have a really unique kind of suddenness in his route running, and his ability to create space. If you just watch him run like a classic, like 12 to 15 yard out pattern, even against an excellent defender, he always has the timing and the depth exactly where it should be. And I feel like if that was a throw that the Ravens went to, you know, four or five times a game just to like kind of keep the offense on target, I wouldn't be upset with that. Like, I feel like it's almost always there if, as, especially, you know, if they're playing man coverage, like it's such a reliable kind of connection that the two of them have. And Flowers is very, very precise in his route running. I think he's a very underrated route runner. He's not really talked about in that way often. But I think that's where he really actually shines. And, you know, he's had his issues sometimes with like, with drops and maybe trying to like do too much before he has the ball or do too much when he does have the ball. But he really has kind of turned into a very well-rounded receiver this past season.
I'm obviously, I'm very positive on Flowers, and precision is a good word to use in terms of how he moves, you know, towards the top of the stem and whatnot. I still don't feel like he's got Bateman's skill to manipulate that cornerback with any kind of a juke at the top of the route. I think he's all about just sticking his foot in the ground when it's time for him to stick his foot in the ground, and then and relying on his athleticism to create space between him and the other. Flowers is an amazing receiver to watch because he doesn't sit in the chair to decelerate like bigger receivers have to. Okay, so normally you'll see bigger receivers have to, and one of the things they'll do is they'll sink their hips. And even if you watch drills ever at camp, they're basically you're in this hip sink and go, hip sink and go, hip sink and go kind of a drills that they do. But most big receivers, they have to sit in the chair in order to come back to the quarterback suddenly. Flowers doesn't have to do it. He just because he's so small, he sticks his foot in the ground, he comes back to the quarterback. I hope it never causes him injury because of this, because it really seems like it would put strain on his plant knee to do so. But he's definitely a guy who has a set of tools that's like very different from other big receivers in the NFL, the prototype receivers. I'm air quoting that just in case you didn't know.
Yeah, it's hard to have, you know, I feel like a lot of times we like to comp, you know, receivers, whether they're coming out of college or even if it's someone who's young in the NFL and say, who does he remind you of? I don't necessarily have that with Zay Flowers because of this unique combination of quickness. And I would say there's a little bit of Steve Smith in his game. I'm going to talk about anybody. And, you know, he's someone who obviously Ravens fans are very familiar with, but I think there is some comparability there, just in the fact that, you know, the ability to run after the catch, it kind of play bigger than his size at times, but he doesn't quite have that same physicality I think that Steve Smith had, but just like the kind of complete package of someone who's a little bit undersized for the position, the ability to change direction, be competitive for the football, make players miss after the catch. It's a really kind of impressive total package that he's put together. And it's interesting to think about his upward trajectory, because I think we have seen him move in a positive way in his second season, as you discussed with the numbers. Unfortunately, obviously the injury kind of derailed the end of the season there for him, but I only think things will continue to move forward with him in a even stronger light moving into the 2025 season, just because he and Lamar seem to be so much on the same page, and the physical ability there is extremely evident. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right, got a couple of different numbers here for you. His yak improved from 5.1 to 6.2 per reception on the season, which puts him in approximately the 70th percentile. By the way, that's very good to see. Hollywood Brown never really developed that, where he obviously had a go to the ground kind of mentality after catches a lot. And even Flowers seems to come back and maybe sometimes have trouble. But then he has other plays, and some of them are from behind the line of scrimmage, where he does pick up some significant yak. But here's what's important. I know there's going to be a yak differential for a play like Flowers, which has a lot of gadgetry. And then I have to see, like, relative to context, what does that mean? And he has an expected yak per catch by Next Gen Stats, which is 4.6 yards per play, and he got 6.2. That is beating his total yardage. That gives him an extra 100 yards on the season, is the way to think of that. 1.6 times his number of catches, which is probably slightly over 60, but it's basically a 100 yards of additional yards he got from beating his expected yak.
And I think it goes back to the same thing you were talking about in his route running, where the change of direction, and not just the change of direction, but like the explosive movements out of the change of direction. Obviously that helps him when he's getting in and out of his breaks, but also after he catches the ball. We've seen him at times draw like face mask penalties because how quickly he like moves past the defender. He's just trying to reach out and grab something, and because of his height, they're grabbing his face mask. Hopefully it doesn't lead to any injury, but I think we've seen that two or three times this year. There's a one play against Denver where he at the end of the first half touchdown where he found himself open in a kind of zone coverage, made one guy miss, and then three other players took a bad angle, and he just beat all of them to the end zone with his speed. I think that's probably where we see that number come into realization, where it's his ability to make one player miss, and then it's open field in front of him, and he has the speed to make a potential 3 to 5 yard increase in distance 50 yards because of that ability that he has. That's why the Ravens try to get him those like kind of short area gadget plays, because if he breaks out, then he can have a huge play. Mm-hmm. But I like to see it more in the intermediate, where he can get the ball in a route and kind of just keep running. That's where I'd like to see him use more.
And there's been a fair amount of that deep crossing action in particular, where he could make hay after the catch. Another thing really highly underrated, missed tackles forced, we think as being a Derrick Henry statistic, because he certainly can do it with his power, also with his speed. Flowers does it with elusiveness, had 18 missed tackles forced this year, was eighth in the league. If you look at the MTFs and the declining set, everyone ahead of him had a lot more receptions. Okay. Now, look, I would expect that to be the case anyway. But like Malik Nabers is the guy who's one ahead of him, and he had 109 receptions to 74. So you would expect him to have more missed tackles forced, and also, being a much bigger receiver, I'd expect that of Nabers as well. But where are the missed tackles forced there? Yeah, so Malik Nabers had one more missed tackles forced. Puka Nacua had one more missed tackle forced, and he probably had about a million more receptions than Flowers did, but you get the idea, is that his MTFs per catch are very high. And it's a really underrated value there that he has. It's actually, I put all this together, all the things, about yardage, yards per target, the good yak numbers and all. It's really surprising that his passer rating being thrown to is only 108.4. He's a below average receiver for Lamar Jackson, if you want to think of him that way.
That is interesting, considering that that's still a good number.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because of, I mean, I'm trying to think of the interceptions were to mostly throws to Rashad Bateman. So it wouldn't be being driven down by interceptions. So maybe it's just the targets. I mean the yard per target is still very good. It's about average for Lamar in terms of his attempt. I was trying to think of why the number is so low. I guess because he didn't have that many touchdowns.
That's the touchdowns. It's four touchdowns that really is the thing that's held him down. It's not the interceptions. So he probably lost, 30 points or something on touchdowns. But anyway, it is what it is. What more to talk about for him? I think he had improved situational awareness this year. Last year, if you remember that San Diego game, he ran in a ball where he really shouldn't have. He had a first down. That was game ending. If he just stopped there, the team takes three kneels and the game is over. But instead, he ran into the end zone, and you risk the chance that the Chargers can come back and tie or win that game, which was unfortunate. But he also had the AFC championship game fumble right at the goal line. I know you're about to say that, weren't you?
Well, I think unfortunately it's one of the plays that he's most remembered by, because it was such a big moment and such a, kind of a, I don't know, it was maybe wouldn't have been the deciding moment in that game, but it could well have been if that had actually ended at the 1 yard line and didn't run in, or if he just hadn't fumbled it, which I still want to give some credit to the defender. I think he made a great play on that ball, but it is kind of a, like you said, a lack of awareness of, what's happening around him, and the chance of extending there is always risky at the goal line. And that's something that comes through experience, frankly.
It does. But, you see Roquan Smith making a third level play where he lets a guy get up in the last to get the clock down to the 2 minute warning, and allow some time to run off the clock. And then you see Flowers not even aware that the team would be much better off if he went down before the goal line. That's level one stuff. You got to know that. Flowers also, was basically let off the hook by Harbaugh on 23 on the kickoff return where he fair caught it. He thought he had signaled correctly to him such that, Flowers should understand. And that cost him a football game. Cost them a football game. So I'm much happier with how he played in 24 in that. I guess going forward, is there a concern to have about Flowers other than health and that his body somehow just won't hold up to this kind of punishment?
I don't see a concern there. I think he's an ascending player, and I don't know even medically if there's really much of a concern. I don't know the extent of the injury. I think the Ravens are very good at kind of keeping those things under wraps in terms of what exactly. We did see him doing some drills before the divisional round game, which I find to be generally a positive thing to see a player being able to move pretty well after what looked like a pretty scary potential injury. But I don't think it's probably going to have significant long-term issues. And I mean, that was really the first time he kind of got significantly injured as a Raven. So I don't really have many concerns with him at all, even from an injury standpoint.
I think mine would be more in terms of a non-contact injury that occurs because of the way he decelerates. Hmm. So it wouldn't be strictly that he takes a hit. He could that could be it, but there's other things I think that could get to him. Anyway, I don't want to speculate too much on negative things like that. I certainly hope he's fine. Harbaugh has indicated that he may have surgery, but if he does, it's just going to be a cleanup procedure. So I mean, I don't believe that at all for starters. So we'll see what they do during that cleanup procedure, or we'll hear about it. But if he's ready to step on the field for OTAs or training camp or whenever he first comes back to play for the Ravens, that'll be the best indicator.
Yeah, I don't anticipate there being any kind of issues when that time rolls around. If he was more hurt, we wouldn't have seen him do like pretty active drills, I think. I imagine that he would have been ready to go the next week. I think he was probably kind of borderline decision, and they decided that they didn't want to take any chance if he wasn't, you know, like 100%. There might have been some worry that it could re-aggravate it. And that does make it sound like there's probably some minor, like, grade one sprain, probably, to one of the, you know, the ligaments there. And it was potentially going to be something that he could come back from last year if the Ravens had moved on, but just wasn't worth the chance of re-aggravation. If they were to move on, then he wouldn't have obviously been, he probably would have been out for the rest of the year and potentially longer. Long-term would always be a consideration with that type of injury.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and anytime you get injured at the end of a year, you really worry about the beginning of of the next one. All right, let's move on. Talk about Rashad Bateman a little bit. Very similar in terms of a explosion, but even more pronounced for him. Went from 56 to 72 targets, so a big increase there. About a 30% increase almost in targets. But as we yards per target went from 6.6 last year, which is really pretty terrible, to 10.5, which was the all-time record for a Ravens wide receiver. Only Mark Andrews has ever had a better yards per target than Rashad Bateman's 10.5 in 2024. So extraordinary increase in productivity. Attack on to that he had the highest touchdown percentage for any wide receiver in team history at 12.5%. Just a great year for Bateman. The yardage totals, you know, being still in the 700s, I don't take as a problem at all. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, in terms of what he was doing on the field, I mean, if the yard per target is as high as it is, he could get more yardage, I think, if he had more targets. But they just didn't need to have that many more Rashad Bateman targets in the offense. And he was so efficient in the ones he did have. You know, if he jumped up to 1,000 yards, would I be surprised? I wouldn't be surprised. But if they have other targets to go around, then it's not necessarily a necessity.
Okay, it's 72 targets this year, over under his 2025 targets for me. I'm going to write down my number. Okay. All right, I got mine.
Okay. I'm going to say a slight bump, and I'm going to go with 88.
93. Okay. So we're close, but there. But even as great as Rashad Bateman is, we're not projecting him to 100 target season. Yeah. Obviously, Flowers will have a lot to do with that, but also Lamar and the quality of the Ravens team in general has a lot to do with it. You know, passing is depressed here because the Ravens are always leading, damn it. You know, oh, darn, you know, and that's why, you know, Hollywood Brown wants to go to another team where he's a bigger part of the offense and they need him more. He can talk about not getting enough targets as if there's more targets to be handed out. I mean, there really aren't. It's just a matter of his, you know, it's wide receivers are not going to generate enormous stats here. And I'm glad we have Flowers and Bateman under contract. Passer rating, this is the big one. Improved from 61.7% throwing to him to 132.2. Now that's using the PFF targets, which take him off the hook for, I think, about five targets. They had him for 67 that are official targets by the NFL. So it wouldn't be quite as good. But there were two interceptions throwing to him during the regular season. Just two interceptions during the regular season. And then the one, of course, in the playoff. The playoffs as well.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of them, I would say the second one, I think that's one against Pittsburgh. I have him a little bit more at fault, even though it's hard to know for sure. Stop route. Like it's, and I think the one similarly in the playoffs where he and Lamar just aren't on the same page in terms of what the kind of way of reading the coverage was or reading the play. I mean, the one against the Steelers was, that was a scramble drill type situation. I believe Lamar was extending the play. The one versus the Bills in the playoffs, that was just, I think, not seeing the defense the same way. Mm-hmm. You do that or just completely on the same or different page as to what the play design was. It's hard to know for sure. I'm not sure if there was a full description of what happened there. But regardless, and the one against the Commanders, sorry, not the Redskins, the Commanders, there was a lot of blame levied on Rashad Bateman at that time. And that was early in the season. He kind of hadn't come on strongly as like the receiver that he is at this point. People were still very upset with his general performance as a Raven. And there was kind of just like a outpouring of, you know, what are you doing there? But that, to me, that was more of a contested catch type play. I mean, he had a defender who was like kind of right on top of him. He definitely could have, the ball hit him in the hands. He could have caught it, but he was being tackled as the ball got there. I'm not going to crush him for that play. I do see a PFF has, you know, some drops that are attributed to him. I know there's a couple that I can think of. So areas to improve, I would say, but I don't think there was significant like issues with him in terms of not being able to be a trustworthy, you know, target in this offense by any stretch. I think the numbers bear that out.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly had a great year in most of the highlight stats here. He had four drops. He was one of five on contested catches. If you want to find some tough numbers for him, but even that's not much. When you look at that in the total context of what he did. NextGen has him in about the 75th percentile of separation. We're really playing down every separation stat, comes with an asterisk again here. So this is another one where I think Lamar bought him time and bought him separation on some plays that probably improved that. Let's talk about route running a little bit, because we talked frequently about Bateman at the top of the stem, and he has a little bit more ability going back to his days at Minnesota to juke at the top of the stem and make a cornerback misstep, which he can really then gain some space on. But you almost never talk about his stacking capabilities. And that's something really special. I think we saw a lot more of that this year, is his ability to get, okay, I don't know how much I want to explain about this. Yeah. Stacking, when the wide receiver basically gets on top of the cornerback and forces the corner into a trail position. It's kind of like being blocked in that lane on the highway. And in order to pass you or get back into the position he wants, the cornerback has to do something extraordinary, either in terms of have the makeup speed to do it, or, you know, go the wrong way or go around to get back in position against you. And then the receiver has all kinds of other tools he can use to stop you from doing that. So think, if you're a car ahead of someone else on the road and you don't want them to pass you, you have some tools at your disposal to not let that happen. You can weave around between lanes. You can put your turn signal on and then not go. You know, you have a lot of tricks you can play to create additional separation for that. Extremely uncomfortable position for a cornerback to be in. And in particular in the NFL, where there's all the benefits of pass interference accrue to the offense and almost never to the defense.
Yeah. And just to kind of add to that, you know, one of the things that Bateman really broke out, or the ways he broke out this year, was in his ability to be a deep threat in this offense, in an offense that didn't really have, I think, a definitive deep threat coming into the season. You know, I think people probably would have thought that Flowers might be more of that player because of his kind of like time and speed. But Bateman was actually, you know, the player who had been doing that previously in, you know, the years past. He just hadn't been on the field as much, hadn't been targeted as much. This year he got the targets. He got the deep targets, you know, his average depth of target, pretty high. And his ability to, I mean, he didn't come down with every single one of the passes, but he was very, very reliable in those roles. And, you know, getting back to your ability to kind of route run, and you said, you know, stack the cornerback, his kind of at the top of the stem, especially on like vertical routes, his ability to kind of manipulate the defensive back who was in his nearest vicinity, I think was really high level. He would at full speed be able to kind of like throw a defensive back in the wrong direction by a slight manipulation with his head or with a step that's like leaning in one direction.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Consider the RIA model. Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move. To find your path, start with Schwab at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths today.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then kind of just launch away from that on a lot of like corner routes or post routes. It's extremely, extremely impressive in those types of routes.
Yeah. He's been outstanding in the, and we, it still was a year of growth. And I feel like Lamar got over some of the psychological issues of trusting him to be able to deal with that. He went 1 of 5 on contested catches. So it wasn't like he was great on that. He had to be open to make catches in 2024. But I think Lamar was basically throwing him open as opposed to throwing it so there's no chance at all that the defensive back can get there. There's a higher degree of trust and a slight difference between those two things I just said in terms of how you're trusting your receiver to go make that play.
Yeah, and I don't know which ones might be considered contested. I'm trying to think against the Chargers, he had that touchdown that was like in the corner of the end zone or at the pylon where I think it was a pass interference as well on a defender, but he kind of just like fought back through the defender and came down with the ball. Really just impressive catch. I would assume that's considered a contested catch.
It was against the Chargers that his contested catch was.
I think that's probably what it was then. Yeah. But also, to be fair, he was open downfield a lot. And I think a lot of people who have watched him in Ravens uniform over the past couple of years have seen that. They've seen Bateman getting open downfield and not always getting targeted. So I think it was really nice this year to see that kind of come together to earn those targets as someone who can be a big play receiver. And he also, you know, made his fair share of catches on critical like third downs as well. He wasn't just a deep threat in this offense. But I think, you know, between him and Flowers, you have two very good route runners with very good speed. You know, I feel like Bateman's speed was a little bit kind of slept on in terms of what his ability is there. You know, he's a 4.4 guy. He's not slow by any stretch. The one thing that neither of them have is tremendous size or that ability to win at like the kind of contested, you know, high point type throws. I guess that's the Isaiah Likely play more than anybody else on this offense. But
Mark Andrews
to an extent, you know, he's been good in that as well. I think of Likely a little bit more just because we've seen some of those plays in the end zone where he just kind of jumps over a guy and catches the ball. But Andrews has done that too.
There's been some from both. Okay, so here's the last question I want to ask you about Bateman is this. Why is he such a polarizing figure among Baltimore fans? There's a large group of people who love the guy. There's a single incredibly frustrating and frankly, he's beyond that. A poster that I've seen on the boards around town who has got the doubling cube at 64 on Don't Bateman. You know, in terms of that, you know what I'm talking about in terms of backgammon where the doubling cube could go up and up and up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, Bateman does something good. Well, doubling down, no Bateman. I'm doubling down. It's at 4. I'm doubling down. It's at 8. You know, at what point do you kind of just sit back and say, you know what? He's really done some good things here. Or are you just prevented from ever believing that about the player? I think the only guy who I've seen some of this attributed to is Lamar Jackson. And that was early in his career. I think everybody who basically had a Lamar has, let me put it this way. I think everybody who still has a Lamar Jackson problem at this point, like literally doesn't think Lamar Jackson is an NFL quarterback. You got to be a racist. I mean, because I don't otherwise see any rationale for it. Nobody's presenting a football argument, that's for sure. But In the case of Bateman, I mean, that's not the nature of the complaint here. The nature of the complaint is not racist in nature. It's just incredible, stubborn stupidity in terms of not being able to recognize what the guy's doing well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to psychoanalyze it, but I do think there is a bit of a, one is that he's not been available for, you know, a large stretch of his career in mm-hmm. Baltimore. And anytime you have a first round pick who doesn't necessarily come in immediately, have those wow type moments, even though he has had some really impressive moments earlier in his career, the touchdown versus Miami, for instance, sticks out in my mind. Yep. But it hasn't been consistent for him. And I think because of the fact that in Baltimore, at least, everybody loves Lamar, that's out of maybe a very small fraction of people. I think there was this notion that he was holding Lamar back to a certain extent because he was, you know, not making the play for Lamar when he needed it, et cetera, et cetera. And there might be a sliver of truth to that in the past, but I think when you're looking at this season in particular, aside from you made a couple of interceptions that you could say maybe they were partially his fault, what he did for Lamar and Lamar's growth as a passer is, I think, leaps and bounds ahead of any detraction that he could still have right. towards him. So that's where I'm at. Like, and I've always liked Bateman. I feel like he's always been someone who has a lot of talent on the field. And I'm just very happy that he was able to kind of, you know, finally have this breakout season where it all came together for him.
Right. Well, me too. And particularly coming after a tough year last year. Absolutely. Miles Boykin is the other guy who people seem to be completely at polar ends. And if you don't like Boykin, the receiver, you basically the first words out of your mouth is, I don't want to hear anything about his run blocking. Well, tough, because that's a lot of value. And if you can add some value as a receiver, it's kind of like saying about Mark Belanger that you don't want to hear about his defense. I want to hear what he can do for me with the bat. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and Boykin, he was what, a third round pick? Like,
yeah.
He had some moderate production, at least at the wide receiver position, and he was a very good run blocker. So, yeah. I mean, was he like a starting wide receiver in an NFL offense? Probably not, but he has a role, or he had a role. I don't know if he's still on a team anywhere. I know he was in Pittsburgh for a little bit.
Yeah. I want to say he was still in Pittsburgh this last year, but he may have been somewhere else. He may have moved on. I'll look that up while we talk about this next guy. And the next guy really is strange because I think he really is the Ravens' number three receiver this year, not because of the typical things, is Tylan Wallace. He made the most of his opportunities this year as a receiver, only was thrown the ball 12 times, caught 11, and 16.1 yards per target. That in it, across the board is just ridiculous production, obviously. But if you look underneath that, it's still incredibly impressive. Four missed tackles forced in only 11 balls caught. That's a 36% rate. Flowers, who's outstanding, his rate's under 25%. And that's not, you know, not a big number, I admit. Had 7 first downs and 141 passer rating throwing to him. It's basically everything he could do as a receiver in terms of the targets he got, he did very well. And that's not even where he helped the Ravens the most. Yeah. He helped the Ravens the most as a run blocker.
Yeah, he's I think easily by far the Ravens' best run blocking wide receiver. I don't think it's particularly mm-hmm. close. I think if anything, that might have been something that was a bit of an issue. I don't think it turned out to be a huge issue, but I always felt like it was a little bit of a tell when Tylan Wallace was on the field.
Yeah,
it was a little bit of, hey, this is the Ravens, they're going to run the ball. So I didn't love that. So in that sense, I would have liked to see him on the field more, so it's less obvious the splits coming from that. I mean, I think a lot of his numbers are inflated due to sample size. You know, he had that one long catch and run against the Bengals that really kind of boosted some of those like yard per target, you know, passer rating numbers, because I think it was like 70 yard touchdown that was like on like a 4 yard swing pass that he did, you know, doing a very impressive job and scoring a touchdown on that play. But it's not necessarily like he was a consistent threat for them at as a receiver. But I do think he has that potential to be a reliable, you know, three or four. I've always liked him. He's had a good route running kind of profile. He's not the speedster that he might have been at one time before he got hurt, but he's always been a very good special teams player for the Ravens. And I think he will continue to hopefully be on the team moving forward because he definitely brings, you know, solid depth. We saw him have a nice play in the divisional round game against the Bills when he was forced to come in and play some extra snaps. I think that ability is there. He just needs to get more of an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. His snaps increased throughout the year, even before the injury to Flowers occurred. So it's not like he wasn't picking up some of Aguilar's snaps, picking up some of the snaps that should have gone to Johnson and other players. I mean, he did a lot of things well, and he was, I mean, it's probably one of the reasons why Deontay Johnson was really pissed off is that Tylan Wallace was on the field ahead of him for a lot of the time that he was here. So he's playing four units of special teams still. He's fifth in total special team snaps. By the way, you mentioned the run pass split, 195 run plays, 148 pass plays when he was in. So yeah, there is a little bit of a tell there. He's an early down guy typically, or he was for a lot of the early part of the season. The Ravens are much more likely to run on early downs than other teams are. Is it a tell? I don't think you could point to anything about the Ravens run game where it really held them back. Do you?
No, and that's why I say I don't think it was really too much of a concern. It just seemed like, and maybe it's just from just, you know, watching every single week, I felt like when he was out there, I was like, oh, this is probably going to be a run. And they did have some nice, you know, explosive plays, I think, when he was on the field because of, and the same reason why, like, you know, play action works, because you can do some potentially unexpected things with different personnel groupings. But yeah, I think that he has earned potentially more, you know, offensive snaps in my estimation.
All right, well, hopefully we'll see him on the field more. He's a career 16.2 yards per return guy on punts, but this year he lost his punt return job because he was having trouble tracking the ball, had trouble holding on to it. I think he fumbled a couple of times and he picked them up both times, or you know, might have been one time he let the ball drop, or a couple times. In case he got, they had a carousel of punt returners this year they used, but they brought in Sims to replace him. And he was the guy who was still returning punts during the playoffs. So, a little bit of a disappointment there, honestly, in terms of that component of special teams.
Yeah. That was the one thing that I was a little bit, weary of, I guess, was how quickly he kind of lost his job. Not necessarily that he was amazing there, but more so in the fact that the players that they brought in to replace him also didn't do great. I feel like there was a lot of ball security issues with the, especially punt returners for the Ravens this year, for whatever reason. And decision-making issues. I think it was the wild card game where Sims was like he made several bad choices in terms of what he was doing. And I was wondering, you know, you have Tylan out there, or he's played those snaps before. I'm not sure why he's not potentially given an opportunity there. But who's to say? It might just be like the way they were practicing, or they felt like that Sims had that potential to break a long one if he was not fumbling the ball or muffing the ball or deciding to fair catch at the 3-yard line. Anyway, that seemed to be a little bit of a problem spot for the Ravens this entire year for whatever reason.
Be an interesting year, this an interesting offseason for Wallace, because he could potentially be a qualified veteran contract guy. He's a UFA. There could well be some team that comes in and offers him a little bit of money. 2 years, $8 million, 1 year, $4.5 million, $5 million kind of thing. There could be definitely be a team that sees the value. And I really fear that a team like the Chargers would be one that would jump in and take Tylan Wallace away from the Ravens, because they like to run the football. They know what a good run blocker he is. And, you know, Roman has experience with him directly playing underneath him from X number of years ago, from 22, as recently as 22. So I think it's possible that that another team comes and offers him some money, but the Ravens have an important friction that I think could make Tylan Wallace a survivor. And if I'm his agent and there's a 2-year, $6 million deal on the table where the Ravens are offering $2.7 million or whatever it would be for the vet men plus this free non-cap dollars, they can give him about an extra $1 million on top of that, which it'll end up being about $2.7 million that he would make next year. I'd stick with that because there's a lot of frictions for the that would keep him a Raven for a long time if he is willing to accept a little less money. Now, if he gets offered $5 million for 1 year, yeah, he's obviously he's jumping for that.
Yeah, I mean, and a player in his type of kind of track record, where you've been like a mid-round pick, you've kind of like been a depth player, special teams contributor. If you can get that type of offer, I think you take it every single time, just because that's probably the most money you'll make ever in your career. At this point, I wouldn't expect him to have like a real breakout season as a receiver, with really any team. But I think with the Ravens, at least if there is an offer there that's reasonable, I mean, the Ravens have shown a willingness and a desire to kind of keep those types of players and kind of keep them for a long part of their career. If you're going to be a long-term special teams contributor, a depth player, whether it's on defense or on offense, that can contribute in a number of different ways, the Ravens absolutely know the value of that, and they will keep you around into like your 10th, 11th, 12th year. As long as you're still a viable special teams player, they will absolutely, you know, have that commitment to you. And, you know, I could see him being that type of player for them.
Albert McClellan, Anthony Levine, those guys really embodied that. Now, Harrison is in that role. Board has returned and appears to be in that role. Had a great year on special teams by Chris Board this year, and also provides you some defensive value. Wallace obviously provided you a lot of offensive value this year. Wouldn't even have to provide at the same level. If he could come on and be a early down, I can help you on run blocking once in a while and get a target once in a while, that'd be fine. But he's, to me, it's a no-brainer to offer him that contract. I don't know if the Ravens will do that initially or if they'll try to get him a little cheaper and then they'll see how it works out. But at the very least, they probably should tell him, hey, you can have the qualified veteran money if you want it. It's about $2.7 million next year. At least take that to market and try and get more from somebody else, and then maybe it becomes part of the comp formula if he does jump.
Yeah, I think that's probably a direction that they'll explore. I honestly don't know what his market would be. I can't imagine a team's going to fork over a lot of money for him just because the production hasn't been there. And generally speaking, special teams players don't get, you know, the big payday. So,
right. Let's move on to Nelson Aguilar. Kind of took a step back after a fine first year with the Ravens. He caught 78% of the balls, 35 out of 45 in his first year. And that dropped all the way off to 48% as a catch rate in his second season, including a lot of difficulty making contested catches this year. Was really, to me, that's kind of like the hallmark, the thing I'm taking away from Aguilar's 2024 season.
Yeah, I think, you know, he still had a pretty significant ADOT in terms of how he was used for much of the year. So his catch rate, I think, from the previous year was unlikely to be maintained in that type of role. I feel like he was more of a slot receiver in 2023. I could be wrong about, you know, the exact numbers, but I feel like that was predominantly where he lined up. I'm not sure if that was the case in 2024. I'd have to look through the numbers. But he definitely seemed like he was being targeted a lot downfield, and he didn't really excel in that window for whatever reason this year. He didn't seem to have that connection with Lamar in the same way that he had at times last year. I feel like in 2023, he was very much a reliable third down kind of chain mover for them. And they were more of an 11 personnel team more consistently. He was on the field rotating in the personnel groupings. And this past year, that definitely fell off. I mean, his snaps fell off, obviously, with the injury too. And he just didn't seem to find that groove that he had. He seemed to have a better connection with Lamar last year. It really never kind of got back on track for whatever reason in the season.
Yeah, they did. They threw a few balls to him, most notably the end of half drive they had in the wild card game against Pittsburgh, where they threw it to six different receivers and got right down the field. Aguilar was 20 or 25 yards of that, right in the middle of it. He had two missed tackles forced the entire season, and they both came on the same play, that 56-yard play against Dallas, which in a lot of ways props up his statistics for the year. It's over 20% of his yardage came on that play, where he, I think it was on the right sideline, makes the first guy miss, gets down, makes another guy miss, and goes all the way to about the 3-yard line or something. I may have the exact yardage wrong, but it was about 56 yards on the play.
So I just looked up his ADOT numbers, and last year he was at, make sure I get this right, 9.7. And in 2024, he was 13.6, which is a huge difference. And I think a lot more outside percentage this year than he was last year. So it's just interesting how that role kind of evolved, and it seemed like whatever he was doing last year really suited him better in what he was asked to do in terms of like short intermediate chain moving as opposed to the downfield stuff.
Okay, so 51.6% slot in 2024, 71.8% slot in 2023 per the PFF numbers. So that change is something, you know, that seems to be real there. Interestingly enough, despite the big difference, it's hard to believe some of this stuff. He comes out with a better receiving grade in 2024 by PFF. I wonder how they got there. I'd really be interested to know that. But his receiving grade, you know, catching the ball, what, 35 out of 45 times or whatever it was in 23, comes out to a 61.4 receiving grade. Am I looking at the right guy? Yeah, Nelson Aguilar. This is very surprising to me. But anyway,
yeah,
is what it is.
He had some drops last year. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, it could be.
It could also be, you know, one of those things where the ball doesn't get thrown his way. And that's a lot of how they do their grading, is not just, you know, the outcome of the play. It's if the ball isn't even thrown in his direction, but he like wins on the route, then he's going to get a positive grade. And he might have, from the nature of playing in this a lot more, being on the field more in 2023, he might have, you know, had more opportunities that he was missing out on, or he didn't like really contribute in the way that he could have. And in a lesser role in 2024, he seemed to maybe be slightly better in some of the routes. It's hard to say for sure. I feel like he was open downfield a few times, and Lamar just like couldn't connect with him. So that could be part of it.
I guess I don't want to analyze too deep on exactly what it might be. He's going to count 3.3 in void dollars against the cap in 2025. I did want to mention this as an interesting thing about passer rating. 8.0 yards per target, by the way, for a wide receiver. Not terrible. It's okay. But the passer rating throwing to him was 101.5. On the surface, that sounds pretty good. But then you realize Lamar Jackson is 119.6 overall. And there's only three guys on the Ravens who were lower than Aguilar. And one was Sims at 83.3, who only had a couple passes thrown his way. Ali and Johnson, both the same 39.6. That's basically the equivalent of every passing complete to those players, which Johnson was pretty close. Ali, I think he did have a catch, but.
That's interesting. Not like a huge negative, I guess, from that perspective, but definitely he wasn't doing as much compared to the other players out there. So, yeah, I don't think it was a season that he wanted to have, probably. I feel like the Ravens also moved away from using the wide receiver on the field as much as they were in 2023. So he had more limited role. Obviously, Deontay Johnson also was not super thrilled with that type of offensive scheme. So, Nelson didn't seem like he was necessarily upset in terms of like vocal issues, or he clearly wasn't suspended or let go. So I think they kept him around. They thought he had some value to contribute, at least as depth, if nothing else. But I kind of thought there'd be more for him this year, just based off of the way we saw him use last year. But a little bit of disappointment, I guess.
Let's move on. Talk about Tez Walker a little bit. Kind of a disappointing rookie year from my perspective that he wasn't able to kind of force his way onto the field and do some things well. We know there are things going on at practice we can't see, obviously. Harbaugh did design that touchdown play for him versus the Giants, supposedly, where pretty simple, run straight up the field, and you know that the other receivers are going to, or the other the safeties are going to leave him alone. And it caught it in the back of the end zone. Nice toe tap, by the way. I thought, you know, good hand-feet coordination there to get down. But I got to say, not good from my perspective that he couldn't get on the field really as a receiver.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of a numbers game, but on the same token, it's, you know, you think there would be some opportunity. And I think that part of it was maybe a lack of ability to contribute on special teams. I know he did come on later in the season and make some plays there, but I feel like that's kind of how you have to earn your snaps a little bit as a rookie to show that ability. So maybe it took him a while to get in the good graces there. I have to think that's part of it. As a depth player, you need to really excel at that part of your game. And maybe he wasn't showing that consistently in practice.
So he had 193 special team snaps on the year and played on five units. So he's a punt and kick, return and coverage, but he also is a field goal block guy. All right. So that's a lot of special teams responsibility right there. What was not good, and PFF really caught this, is that he had five missed tackles and made only two. That is really bad. Now, normally you have a high missed tackle rate on special teams, like 30% is still might be okay in terms of missed tackle rate on special teams, because everything's in the open field. And a lot of times what you're really trying to do is slow the guy down, turn him, retrack him so that the next guy can hit him and make that tackle. It's much harder to make tackles in that. So I don't want to overstate the nature of this problem, particularly with a small sample size here, but it's still not where you'd want to start. And you miss a few tackles and you get noticed on special teams. And as a guy who might miss a tackle. So you don't want that.
Yeah. So he started as a special teams player in week 7. So mm-hmm. He wasn't on the field before that.
And then he was active for 11 games in total, which takes him, I believe, all the way through the end of the season, yeah. Active every week.
I believe so. Yep. So he eventually, you know, got onto the active roster at least, but then in terms of actual like offensive snaps,
60.
Yeah. Very, very few. And really only once Aguilar got hurt did he kind of like get a real look. So my personal kind of draft opinion on him was he was very raw. Mm-hmm. You know, he seemed like speed, deep threat, pretty much, and that's it, with kind of inconsistent hands. Obvious speed, obvious kind of like size, nice combination there, but the rest of the game I felt was missing. And I don't know if it's something that can be learned. I assume there is some learning at the wide receiver position, but a lot of times when a player is raw coming in, it really takes some time. Fortunately, he wasn't like an early pick, but I would hope to see him get some more opportunity in the coming years, but I don't necessarily see him supplanting like Rashad Bateman as like a deep threat in the offense. No. So it's hard to see like where he really fits in from a schematic perspective.
I was just about to ask you, do you think that he may be a guy who the Ravens end up using in more and more of a special teams role as things go on? Obviously he'd have to play better at it than he did in 2024, but you know, he certainly, you know, had a 3-to-1 relationship in terms of where his snaps were occurring. He'll get on the field some as a deep threat. I'm thinking back to Demetrius Williams, right? I'm not missing that. Yeah, Demetrius Williams. And I mean, it's not like the Ravens haven't had 10 other guys like him, Marcus Smith, Clarence Moore, other people who played a lot of special teams but didn't play a lot of receiver. You know, he might be modeled after, but I wonder. I mean, one of the things that kind of bothered me in camp is that he was kind of taking a physical beating from some pikers, Christian Mathieu in particular was kind of beating him up a little bit in terms of the his coverage snaps against him.
Yeah, and I mean that was kind of what I saw from him as a prospect. Like he just didn't. He just needed still to learn the wide receiver position. He just felt like he was kind of like run fast, jump, catch the ball kind of player, and he didn't have any nuance to his game. And I don't think his hands are very advanced at the catch point or in his ability to kind of like, you know, work off of cornerbacks, you know, the ability to kind of like be physical through the contact, through a jam at the line of scrimmage. If he has a free release and he can run straight for 10 yards, he might be able to, you know, run past you. But NFL cornerbacks generally are better than that. So I think it's going to be up to him and hopefully up to coaching to kind of like figure out how to kind of push him in the right direction. I just think it's going to be an uphill battle for him to get consistent snaps on this team.
All right. Well, fair enough. Deontay Johnson, more of a distraction than anything else to this team. Obviously, 5 targets for 6 yards, 1.2 yards per target. Good riddance, as far as I'm concerned. I was happy to see him go when he did. I wasn't happy to hear about the pouting at all. Harbaugh haters really took a gut punch, I think, when he did the same thing and was cut again by Houston. Just an absolutely absurd turn of events for Johnson. And kind of funny that the Ravens, for purely technical reasons, end up re-signing him or claiming him, sorry, at the end of the year. I wonder how that phone call went, by the way. You know, hey, Deontay, we're claiming you again. Don't come to Baltimore. We don't want you here. We're doing this purely for technical reasons. What the hell did that sound like? Was there even any communication at that point? Did Deontay call the Ravens and say, oh, sure, when should I be there? Do you need me there on Tuesday or Thursday kind of thing?
Well, I mean, at that point, you don't even come into the facility, right? Because he was on the other team's roster through week 18. So
that's right. He wasn't allowed to play. Good point.
It's just kind of a...
Technical.
Yeah, technical move to have him as someone who counts towards you in the comp pick situation if he gets signed on somewhere else. So, it was just a... I mean, I think Eric DaCosta came out and said, you know, a calculated gamble that didn't work out, you know, essentially in so many words. They thought there was some potential there, but I mean, given his track record, it's hard to kind of see huge upside with him. And the downside clearly was someone who just wanted things to go his way. And if it didn't go his way, then he was going to pout in the corner and find his way off multiple rosters in one season and in an unimpressive way. So not much else to say about him, unfortunately.
All right. Well, let's let him go. Anthony Miller, Steven Sims, nothing really to say about them. They're like as happy with the way both of them, you know, were in there during the playoff game and taking some snaps and doing some things. Let's talk 2025 needs. Another pick at wide receiver anytime in the first 2 or 3 rounds anyway?
I don't think so. I mean, it's hard to say for sure. The Ravens are never the team that's going to telegraph, you know, where they're going to go. They make unexpected positional choices in the draft sometimes, sometimes to the ire of many fans. But I don't expect it. You know, the number of draft picks that they have used in high picks in the recent years and have actually, you know, panned out for them, I think in the case they don't necessarily need to go in that direction, there's other significantly higher needs. I think this is probably for the first time a position that they may not even address in the draft at all. Depending on,
I would be surprised at that. I would be surprised if a pick at no point is made.
I mean, I think they generally tend to draft a wide receiver at least one every year. I think most teams do, but I feel like you might want somebody who can come in from a veteran perspective and fill a role as opposed to the draft. But we'll see. It's definitely not a deep room, I would say, for the Ravens right now in terms of what they have available. A lot of free agents. Not a lot of free agents, but a couple of free agents who are, you know, people who took snaps this year. So it's, I guess from that perspective, you want somebody to kind of like be that kind of depth position. But I really think they could be more benefited from a free agent acquisition, someone who can contribute right away as like a wide receiver three.
I mean, that's, they certainly have that option. There's a price at which I would want Aguilar back, but it's probably about the vet minimum. It's not much more than that. They probably need, I think they just take the other side of the coin. I think they do need a pick at wide receiver. They don't have much after the big two. If Aguilar, if they can't sign Ree Wallace to this vet type deal, or come to a different contract agreement with him that might be, you know, 3 years, $8 million or something, or, you know, some multi-year agreement with Wallace, then I think they're actually in a little bit of trouble in the room, because we saw what just happened this year. Wallace stepped in admirably. Aguilar did okay in the absence of Flowers. And I would not want to face that situation again. You definitely need to have something in terms of that. I want to avoid veteran receivers who cost like $5 million. That kind of signing is exactly not what the Ravens need this year. They need a veteran who costs the vet minimum. Mm-hmm. And I think they did a good job of finding several of those for the practice squad, which I think is a route they could take again this next year. You know, have Miller, Sims, and Kirkwood all on your practice squad, who are all making vet minimum, basically, is a fine place to be. You can get some play value out of that if you need to. They could be your fourth or fifth receiver in a particular week where you're shorthanded. I think they might actually try and replicate that. I also think if they're going to draft a receiver, it better be a speed guy. And if you're looking for what characteristics they don't take, I think I'm okay with not being a big size guy. I like a pure slotty gadget guy would be just fine.
So you would rather them find somebody who's more in line with what they currently have in a Zay Flowers as someone who could fill in if he got hurt?
I'm not asking to fill in for Flowers. I'd ask him to supplement Flowers, potentially be on the field at the same time, which that carries its own problems, obviously, because you've got two real small guys. If you want to run the football, then you are kind of telling the other team you're not doing it. Keaton Mitchell would potentially fill that role. If they'd give it to Keaton Mitchell, I'd be happy. But they've got the other big receiver, and Tez Walker is the guy who I think they want to try and give a chance to this next year. He'll have to get some significant snaps given what their wide receiver rooms looks like. You want to over under his snaps, I'd put him at maybe 250 this next year instead of 60 this year.
I think you'll see more. At least just looking at the way the depth chart looks right now, I think he has to by default.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to have to earn them still. I think they're just going to be handed to him.
No, so, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I could see if the Ravens do draft a wide receiver, I kind of don't think it'll be around 2-1 through 3. It'd probably be a later round pick. I would imagine they go after somebody who is maybe smaller school, best played a lot and caught a lot of balls. Not to necessarily point fingers at specific players, but kind of like a James Prochet type, who, you know, it might be able to come in and play special teams for you as well. I think that's kind of what they need at the position. Although I also think that there could be a role for somebody who's like a prototypical outside receiving type as well. I don't know if that's something you can find in the first three rounds, and that's why I feel like maybe the veteran route is more the path to go for that. But I think that's what they're missing, is kind of the outside the numbers ball winner.
Okay.
Like looking at like the Bills, for instance, like a Mac Hollins type, someone who can block, someone who can be a big body down the field, catch like a jump ball, or, you know, something where they have a little bit more ability to kind of win at the catch point. I feel like we talked about that from the tight end, but they don't really have that necessarily from the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got one mailbag question here. Let me ask it to you. It's from Lyman's Packback. He says, do you think Mark Andrews' struggles in the division round makes it harder to walk away from him this off season? So I wonder if the optics of appearing cruel might actually force the Ravens' hand.
No, I'm gonna say no. I don't think they necessarily need to move on from Mark Andrews, but I don't think they feel like they have to stick with him because they don't want to look like they made a tough choice.
Right. I mean, it's not like this choice hasn't been faced staring him right in the face the entire season. It's not not having anything to do with Mark Andrews' play. They have three tight ends stacked up with the same expiration date on them. If you have 3 gallons of milk with the same expiration date in your refrigerator and it's 3 days away, you're probably not going to finish all that. You need to do something with part of that. So anyway, it's a tough situation. And obviously, teams that draft well often find themselves in this place. You got to unravel your draft in a way and make a trade. I think it does make a lot of sense for the right value to trade Mark Andrews right now, and likely is so much younger and potentially, whether he's as good as Mark Andrews was at his peak is not really relevant. The question is he going to be better than Mark Andrews over the course of the next 3 years? And I think the answer in Likely's case is probably yes.
Yeah, I think there's a good argument for that. I don't know. It's hard to see how this team treats these types of situations. I mean, I would want to have Isaiah Likely on my team. Like, if there's any kind of like question or doubt, that's where I would lean. I just think what he brings to the offense as a dynamic is kind of rare, frankly. Like, there aren't that many tight ends who can do what he does. And for them to like hit on that at the end of the fourth round, and then not be able to keep him on the team because of, you know, a situation with a higher profile player who's kind of complicated history and big moments of games. I think you do what you do to make the team better. I think that's what they're always going to do from like a GM standpoint. And if that means making a hard decision in terms of Mark Andrews, I think that decision will need to be made.
Yeah. All right. Gabe, wonderful talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can find me on social media, Twitter, at Gabe Fergie is probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. Just, you know, follow me, send me a message. Love to chat about the Ravens. And then I'm also on Blue Sky, also at Gabe Fergie there. I think I see more and more people starting to join over there. So it might be an interesting kind of space as well to have some conversations. So, looking forward to anybody who wants to reach out and talk football.
Outstanding. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. I've gotten some great short ideas. I will respond to every one of them, I promise you. I've gotten several that I have not yet responded to, but I've got tons of time this offseason. And I'm going to defer starting one of these historical pod sessions, which I love doing, to get in as many shorts as I can. And I'd like to do some of them prior to the draft. If you have a draft related one or anything that looks forward to the draft or the offseason, roster building, that sort of thing, now is a great time to get that in before the start of the league year is the ideal time to record that short. So thanks for your ideas. Use filmstudy21@verizon.net. That's my email if you want to send me any kind of an outline for such a show, which I've gotten several of those, like I've said already. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Ken, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.